It is indeed my honor to be able to speak at this occasion. The organizers of this conference decided that focus on peace and how important it is and how much we need it is not sufficient, that we have to move beyond the quest for peace and begin to create those conditions, circumstances, situations, prerequisites, which will make possible realization of this eternal hope of humanity. The organizers did that because they were aware that the peace of humanity, world peace, its advent is very close, and certain important activities should be done on our part in order to achieve it. Because when we think about it, peace is that condition in human affairs which replaces aggression with tenderness, competition with cooperation, strangeness with solidarity, injustice with justice, domination with equality, bondage with freedom, self-centeredness with others' directedness, cruelty with kindness, differences with uniqueness, passions with compassion, ignorance with knowledge, power struggle with love relationships, destructiveness with creativity, rigidity with growth, materialism with spiritual fulfillment. These conditions, this type of transformation is most challenging. The distinguished speaker before myself, Dr. Laszlo, outlined the pregnant conditions in the world of humanity today, in the realms of science and in the realms of spiritual thinking, in the consciousness of humanity, in the goodwill of mankind, in the greater level of enlightenment that we have, the pregnant conditions for bringing about the realization of this transformation to a peaceful society. I will not repeat those conditions because I would not be able to do them as well, and besides, already we are illumined with his remarks in that respect. However, I thought that I would share with you here briefly a review of the attempts of the Baha'i community over the last 1.5 century, almost last 1.5 century, in creating a new world order, to see what are the characteristics of this attempt, what the Baha'i model, the Baha'i paradigm is for this new world order, not only at a theoretical level, but also at a practical level. Theories always are beautiful, are fantastic. You read about them, you get excited about them, they make sense, they feel good. But when you are engaged in putting those theories into action, a totally different process comes into motion. And it is important for us, as much as possible, dispassionately, to look at the Baha'i experience at creating, by my attempt at creating a new world order, try to understand that new paradigm, to see whether theoretically it's sound and whether in practice it has succeeded to some degree at least. In doing so, I'm aware that I am focusing on a range of time which is approximately 1.5 centuries, a community of humanity of Baha'is that is spread all over the world, and a host of concepts and experiences that truly are beyond my ability to comprehend them and make sense of them and share them with you. Therefore, my presentation in every respect will be inadequate. The Baha'i Faith began on May 23, 1844. That night, the first individual who became aware of the beginning of this new spiritual era was welcomed to the house of the Bab, the forerunner to Baha'u'llah, by the following words: enter therein in peace, secure. And he later on reflected about the first few moments of his experience that night, the first individual who became the follower of the manifestation for this age. His name was Hussein. He said, "Methinks I was in a place of which it could be truly said, therein no toil shall reach us, and therein no weariness shall touch us, no vain discourse shall they hear therein, nor any falsehood, but only the cry, peace, peace." That was the beginning of the Baha'i era, the first few words and thoughts that were expressed and shared. Then came a very remarkable time in the history of the Baha'i Faith. That remarkable period is called the period of the Babi dispensation. And it is essential for us to have a knowledge of that period of Babi dispensation, because it followed another profound change in the structure and way of thinking of the Baha'i community. The Babi dispensation had certain characteristics, and I talk about it, you will become a little bit more aware of that. But I like to do that within the context of describing the whole Baha'i paradigm as trying to establish a unified, peaceful world. It has been already stated that the Baha'i Faith considers unity as the fundamental prerequisite for peace. The unity paradigm refers to many aspects of this concept, all of them. I share with you three dimensions of them. When we speak of unity, we are speaking of unity from within, an inner unity that as human beings we have to be able to achieve, which results in inner peace, a unity between our capacities of knowledge, of love, and of our will. Then there is an interpersonal unity, unity between people. And that unity would manifest itself in our interpersonal relationship through such processes as acceptance of others as the eradication of prejudice, as living a life that is manifested by love and encouragement, by equality of men and women, and equality of all people. The word equality in Persian language is musavat. And Baha'u'llah said that ultimately we have to move beyond musavat and achieve muvasat. You change the places of S and V. And muvasat means that state of being and human relationships that everyone would prefer others over himself or herself. This is a developmental process. Ultimately, we will achieve it. But it is a process, gradual, going first to equality, musawat, and then to preferring others over ourselves, muvasat. And then comes the state of world unity. State of world unity is a very complex issue and a simple issue at the same time. It is simple because all we can imagine it one way or another within ourselves. It's complex because we have to create it. To create a world unified and united in the condition of diversity, the kind of a condition that brings about all of the richness of life into it, we have to be able to do several things. First of all, we have to know how to deal with human violence. We have to become victorious over human violence. Secondly, we have to become citizens of the world and to learn how to be the citizens of the world. And the third thing that I want to describe here is to learn how to safeguard the unity in diversity so we would not fall prey to authoritarianism, to authoritarian dictatorial forms of government, nor prey to anarchy. These are the three areas that I want to share with you from perspective of the Baha'i paradigm and Baha'i experience. Human violence is considered by many scientists and thinkers as being a fundamental aspect of human reality. And the only thing that we can do about it is somehow to deal with it. Konrad Lorenz, a winner of Nobel Prize, one of distinguished scientists in the study of human violence, says, "The first and the most obvious and the most important percept in the process of trying to deal with human violence," because he considers human violence as a part of human nature, "is to know thyself." And by that he means we must deepen our insights into those causes of our behaving in a violent manner. And then he said, one way of doing this, one line, is the objective, ethological investigation of all the possibilities of discharging aggression in its primal form on substitute objects. What he says is that one way that we can do is to find the ways that we can show our aggression, which is a part of us, against other objects than each other. Well, you know, like the humanity right now, every group is doing it upon all other groups in order to satisfy that need. The second is the psychoanalytic study of so-called sublimation, which means trying to find a way to deal with your violence, such as if you are really a violent person and want to cut people up, become a surgeon. The third way of avoiding aggression is the promotion of personal acquaintance. Just try to get to know other people, not really love them, just personal acquaintance. Hi, how are you? Kind of a thing. If possible, friendship between individual members of different ideologies or nations. The fourth, and perhaps the most important measure to be taken immediately, is the intelligent and responsible channeling of militant enthusiasm. Now, this way of thinking is extremely frightening, because this way of thinking tells us that there is no hope about thinking at human beings in a different way than already have been decided in some psychosocial biological schools of thought about human nature, that human nature is in and by itself violent. There is a body of information that clearly shows us that that's not the case. I would not go into details of reading quotes from you from different groups of people to prove this, but just some few examples would give us an idea of probably different way of being able to look at ourselves and issue of violence. Let's think about what happens to us when we face violence. Usually, we have several alternatives. First, we ignore it if it's not happening against us. Second, we try to rationalize it away. We say, probably this person did something wrong, deserved it. Or this person is emotionally disturbed and that's what he's doing it. But when violence is taking place at the level of all humanity, you cannot say all people are crazy. There was a study done in Manhattan, New York, a few years ago, in which they concluded that 3 out of 4 people living there had some kind of emotional problems. And therefore, they said that if you are standing with 3 other people and one of them is sane, then you know which group you belong to. The third way of dealing with violence, which is very common in our society, in our world today, is to meet violence with violence. This is the paradigm that is used, the model that is used in our world today. In our world today, the concept is that if you want to control human aggression, you have to become more powerful and more powerful and more powerful so that the other violent individual would be frightened of you and would not show violence. This process, of course, is extremely dangerous. This has resulted in the armed race that we have in our world today. This has resulted in the circumstances of life right now that, as Dr. Laszlo said, there is at any given time and moment this profound danger of total destruction of the human race from the planet Earth. This is remarkably sad. Then we move from level of dealing with violence to another alternative. And the other alternative is that you deal with violence through passive resistance. The whole concept of non-violent movement